for the audience already tuning in, let us know in the comments from which city you come. And don't be afraid to ask your questions in the comment section for the people who are on the screen right now. We will start our panel talk in some 48, 47, 46 seconds. But meanwhile, just let us know in the comments where you're from. And during the talk, at whatever moment, bring on your questions in the comments. I will bring them on screen and talk to the nice panelists we have here talking hockey. Let's enjoy 30 seconds and we're live, people. Everybody, we are starting off with our very first panel talk for this World Cup, and as you see, we managed to scrape together quite a nice panel. Let me introduce the people on your screen already. So on the top right, or now on the big screen, we have Judith van der Meer, current international player for the Belgian national women's team, plus 200 caps, a very experienced player, playing a club hockey for Brakschata in Belgium. The one on the second screen, and now on the big screen, Mark Knowles. And the Mark Knowles obviously needs no introduction, legend of the game, former Australian international, the winner of the World Cup that we are about to watch now in 2014 among, well, you had multiple, I think, huh? Well, 2014, the last one, the one who's still giving me nightmares as a parent from the Dutch national team. And the third player on the screen, Bob de Voogd, yeah, will also still have nightmares from that game, I am sure.
I wasn't playing. I have nightmares of the whole year.
Sorry, Bob.
It's okay.
You don't have any nightmares about that one. It was the fault of the coach. You were not there, and that's why we lost that game.
Exactly.
Okay, Bob de Voogd, former Dutch international, joining the panel. And last but not least, in the most of the ways, is Mo Fürster from Germany. Also a World Cup title holder, Olympic gold medalist. Well, Mo Fürster, also legend of the game. Needs not a lot of introduction. So, like I told you guys in the pre-show here, the best panel talk is the one where I shut up as much as possible. So, ask yourself the questions. I'm going to start us off with a couple of questions, but talk among yourself as much as possible, and let me shut up as much as possible to make this a good one. Let me, ladies first, obviously. So, Judith, let me start you up with this question, and you guys will get the same one. What was remarkable for you from the first games that we saw during the World Cup?
For me, it was quite a predictive start of the World Cup. First of all, the atmosphere in India seemed amazing. I never had the privilege to play there, but if I hear the stories also from other Red Lions, it's just crazy packed stadiums. Also, the opening ceremony, so many people. So I think, yeah, it's always a nice place to have a World Cup there. And also for the games, I didn't see any remarkable results. All the big countries won their games. Some countries started slow. Or Australia, for example, I expected them to start really sharp, which they did. So yeah, it was a really nice start, and now excited for the next pool games, but no surprises yet.
Yeah, Mark, your remarkable fact from the games, other than Australia beating 8-0 to France, but. Don't know if that's remarkable or not.
I think, as you just said, a great start. The opening ceremony looked beautiful. That stadium in Rakula or Rakela or however you would like to pronounce it looks absolutely amazing. I think one of the best stadiums that I've seen. I agree. I actually was hoping for some tighter matches. I thought on day one, there may have been some closer matches. But maybe what we've seen is that the big, who I would call the big hitters, are all going to be right there at the end of the tournament. And I think the tightest match was the only one, I think, in question, which was the India-Spain game. I thought that would be tight. And yeah, I think there's some very, very nice matches still to come.
Well, absolutely. Bob, what was the remarkable fact that you noticed those first 2 days?
A lot of has been said already. What I found remarkable was that it was a lot of clean sheets. It was a lot of 4-0, 5-0, 8-0. So the teams that should have won, they won. The other teams barely scored. So that's something that's, I think, remarkable. Argentina was the game that stood out for me, only 1-0. They had a lot of penalty corners, which they didn't score. So yeah, if you have to pick out something, that probably should be it for me. But and I thought Australia, France, I think it was the quarterfinal 4 years ago.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
8-0 is a big score, and they looked impressive. But I don't know, like you ask, if it's Australia's start, or is it France that's just not that good this year? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know yet.
Mo, your remarkable fact from the first 2 days.
I would also say France and South Africa. That kind of surprised me, I have to say. Although, I mean, I've been following through by watching like the summaries on YouTube of the Pro League games and stuff, and I don't think that really gives you the full picture of what's actually happening looking at the big tournaments. Mm-hmm. But still, I thought that South Africa did a pretty good job, at least with the result in the end. They've been really impressive over the year, winning their first kind of FIH 10 tournament at home in South Africa. And they just are at a spot where they can really make the crossover games at least. And then it's a one-day match, so it's going to be exciting to see how far they can go. And I have to say that Australia surprised me, because I saw a lot of France over the last couple of years, and I expected them to be a lot closer to the top five or top four nations. So the Aussies smashing them. It's always bad to start against Australia at the beginning of the tournement, because
it's better to start against the Germans, because usually you guys have a slow start.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's absolutely true. Usually you come from a 10-day holiday, 10 days holiday to start the tournament and then try to grow into that. No, but so those were two surprising results. But one other thing that just popped my mind when you were asking for like special things on the first couple of days, I was very surprisingly happy. It was a happy surprise for me when I watched the Chile game against New Zealand just over lunchtime. And apart from the fact that Chile scored their first goal and it was somehow cool to see, what I really liked about that scene, I don't know if you watched it, they scored a backhand shot.
Yeah.
And the New Zealand team referred it very quickly, asking for this nowadays very typical backhand touch. If you score I don't know how you guys call it. We have our own name for it. But what I really liked is that I feel like I was sure they're gonna say it's a no goal, because it's very difficult to see. And umpires nowadays usually would just go with the easy call, which if you would have called that, it would have been, you couldn't really complain. It was difficult to see. And, you know, he's running backwards. And then, I mean, Bob, you've been hitting that shot a lot. It's very difficult to hit that flat when you run to the other away from the goal, right? But I thought it was a clean goal, and I was very happy that the umpire, that the video umpire said no reason to change your decision and just went with the goal. So I hope that's maybe a good start looking at also at the video umpiring at this tournament, because I'm always very critical about that in hockey, and I think it's not always helping. So here also I think we have to mention when it's working. So I was very happy about that.
I agree. It looks like it's backstick a lot, but what happens actually is you hit the ball into the ground, and that's why it's going up. If you hit it, sometimes it is backstick, to be honest. But That's yeah.
Never when it's about your shot, eh, Bob.
I can remember one goal in the final in Holland. That was 100% backstick.
Yeah,
but it counted. So
yeah, I think Mark well. Mark also remembers one goal that was 100% backstick in 2006.
I definitely do, Mo.
But back then, no one knew. No one knew that was actually possible.
It was like a rainbow.
I listened to the podcast you did, Mark, with Simon Orchard yesterday.
Yeah, yes.
And you were talking about that goal, huh?
We were, yeah. The goalkeeper, Stephen Molam, he's 16 years on, and he still hates goalkeeping.
Yeah. Okay, can imagine. Mark, were you surprised by the 8-0 victory of the Aussies against France? Because France has been a team that has been coming. We know that France is preparing a team for the Paris Olympics, their home country, so they're really putting an effort towards hockey. They had some good results in recent years, but they were nowhere against you guys.
Yeah, I was surprised, definitely. I think my surprise came more out of the French performance than what I thought the Australians might have given. The Aussie guys they've been, you know, one of the top teams in the last 4 or 5 years. I think we know that from the Tokyo Olympics and some of those other results. I think France... it just looked like France just weren't as structured. And Mo and Bob, you know, Judith, you guys will know, but the strength of European hockey is the structure that you play in. And I thought the French might have been much harder to play against for the Aussies. Mm-hmm. I think I probably saw what I thought I would see from the Australians, plenty of power, mm-hmm. plenty of opportunities. You never know in the first match. I think the French had a couple of chances early, but in general, the Aussies probably had the run of the game. And that's always a challenge, as Mo said early on. If you play a team that's very aggressive and loves scoring and likes to really dominate opponents, you just don't want to give them too many chances early on when they're fresh, when they're excited, when they're ready to go. So I was probably more interested in the French performance. I think watching in the last kind of 12 months or so, I don't think they've reached maybe the heights that they did a couple of years ago when we all thought they were coming, the Junior World Cup performance, and maybe when, you know, Jeroen Delme had them, they've had a change of coach. Maybe their focus is just too much on Paris 2024. I don't know, but that was the surprising point for me. I thought they weren't as good as I would have thought, rather than the Aussies being significantly better.
I agree. I think Jeroen leaving has a big impact on that team.
Yeah.
He is a guy, if you talk about structure, that's the most important part for him. We all know mm-hmm. that. He was like this as a player. He's doing it at the Dutch national team now. He put that team together in a way that they could perform against bigger teams. And I think now what you see is they have some good players, but they're not playing in the same way they did 2 or 3 years ago, in my opinion. Yeah.
I think also in that group, I don't know if that play for me, it would have played some part at least. I mean, they know France knows they would not be able to really finish first in that group, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the toughest group, maybe the toughest group. Although then again, that doesn't really matter. But as long as you're not fighting for that last spot, but mm-hmm. I guess at one point, you know, this is the real tournament for them starts against South Africa and Argentina, right? So in the end, but that's what I meant at the beginning against us. If you start against Australia, so it's just a different approach because I bet France would say okay, let's try to do this and start into the tournament. And then after I don't know, minutes, you just look around and you have these the likes of Tom Craig and stuff running past you and being already on almost 100% on top of their game, which was always the strength, as I said before, of the Australians, that they just, there's no less than, let's say, 98%. So you want to beat them, you're going to be at 100. And they don't care. They're reckless. They don't care. It's they are able to just smash teams and finish 8-0 in an opener of a World Cup. So you would, there are other teams like, actually, Bob, the Dutch are a little bit like that too. If there is a flow, if you guys were running back in the days, then you could also smash teams like that. Yeah. We, for example, were never like that. We were leading 3-0 would mean, okay, slow down, let's pass the ball in back, let's have some, you know, control of the game or whatever. And then in the end, we would maybe win 4-1 or 4-2. Would also be happy, but it's a different style. And if you get under the wheels like that, then this can happen very quickly. But I don't think it's, I don't think it's, for them, it's not the most important thing in this tournament. I think the tournament for them starts now.
Yeah. But the pressure is on.
Also, but I also really had, I had the feeling that they really let it slip when they were 4-0 behind. Then it was like one goal after another. And I think every rebound in the circle, they were too late. I think Australia had 3-4 rebounds after each other. And for me, it's also, okay, you know that Australia can really demolish teams, but also it's for the mindset to then start focusing on the next game when you get an 8-0 against. It's, it can be, how do you, what do you take away from that game? Because at the end, it was like, what, which positives do they take to the next game? It's, that's the difficult thing. I really had the feeling they were like, okay, we can't be bothered anymore. So that's, I have a bit difficulties with that mindset, you know?
What was your take from the first game of the Belgians, Judith?
I think, starts just 3 points and 5-0 is good for the, good to start the tournament. I think I was a bit disappointed with their first half. And I think, honestly, that Korea was in the third quarter was better. They had the best chances. And I think Victor Meunier did a brilliant job running out, I don't know how many penalty corners. So for the same price, it would have been a 1-1 at one point. I think they also struggles with some injuries because Arthur Van Doren hasn't played in the second half. And I know that he's really struggling with his back. So I hope that he will get better during the tournament. Also, John Van Domen not playing. So that's maybe some issues in the team. I hope that really gets better. But I they weren't really convincing. But that was the same 4 years ago. So that doesn't really says a lot. But 3 points, that's the most important. But I'm, they didn't seem that confident. If you compare, for example, the start of Australia, that's completely something.
I was a little bit surprised by the how to put this nicely, the lack of quality of the Asian teams. Korea against the Belgians was not bad, but okay, not at the top international level. Malaysia against the Dutch, I thought, was very poor. What about this decline of Asian hockey, or I'm seeing things wrong?
Well, I think you're tough, at least, on them. I think India improved a lot. I think they're playing very well. I was not necessarily shocked by Japan. I think they also did a quite decent job keeping the game close till halftime. And then the same in the end for Korea. I was actually a little surprised of the first half. Maybe you're saying, obviously, you were not happy with the Belgian performance, but I thought Korea was also doing a quite decent job in defending. I was surprised.
Of course. I was focused on the Belgians, but of course, they really defended well.
I was surprised to see some faces there. I mean, you guys were better, but if I'm not mistaken, there were at least a couple of players that played the 2006 World Cup, which is like a while ago. But to answer your question, I think they are at the moment, Asia is a little bit behind, but I feel like they are rather coming back than being on the way down. So with India pushing that really through the Asian games and being a top contender in there, Japan is getting better. And as I said, Korea was at least okay, I would say.
What if Korea scored one of their penalty corners? It would have been a different game.
Yeah, probably.
Absolutely. And by the way, regarding these penalty corners, this is also, I mean, it's crazy to see how good the PC defending got over the last 6 years. I mean, honestly, you see, I'm looking at it sometimes from this you know, whatever, drag flicker perspective, trying, when you slow it down and you're trying to look at, okay, what would you do maybe to try to set them off or whatever. But it's so difficult that the running is so good, or I would say crazy, but it's still good in terms of defending, that this really changed. And I'm really, it's really exciting to see whether teams now start to score through variations or kind of combinations rather, which I expected actually for the first day, because they all know what's happening. And usually it would be a good call to then maybe start by playing off some set pieces or whatever to then get more space for the running, because teams have to maybe think it through and do something different. But yeah, that's going to be exciting to see.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, PC defense for Germany is a big game changer, I think. Mark, can you tell us what Blake Goffers hasn't played yet? Obviously, with Jeremy Hayward, you've got a very good substitute drag flicker, if we can call him like that. But yeah, the PC defense is becoming very annoying for those drag flickers. How do you solve that?
Yeah, it is. I think I agree with Mo there. I probably thought that over the last maybe 6 to 12 months after the Olympics, after Tokyo, I thought we might have seen a little bit more creativity from corners to get some more options in the runners' heads and some uncertainty for the goalkeepers. We haven't seen that. Maybe people are saving it for the World Cup. I don't know. But if we haven't seen very much at all so far, it's hard to see it changing. I also smile a little bit, Mo, when I think about, you know, you took up drag flicking towards the end of your career, mate, but the confidence, the self-confidence of these drag flickers, it's like they don't even care who's running. They just think, I'm going to flick it in no matter what. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the running is amazing. I think it's a game changer. I know in Australia we put a lot of emphasis on it, and it's celebrated as much as a goal, especially in big matches, because we know how important the corner is. And yeah, that running yesterday, some of the running was just unbelievable. It was amazing to see some of the things now where they get hit, you know, that would break my leg.
Has it changed the game for drag flickers that you talked about, the drag flick from Mo that he took up at an end of his career, which was not the most powerful drag flick, but it was well placed. Sorry, Mo, sorry. But it was well placed. And what I'm seeing right now is guys like Alex Hendricks, and he doesn't care that much about his placement. Okay, it's got to be in between the posts, but he focuses on the power of it, the speed. Is that the change that has come from the better PCD?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think if you look at the amount of goals that don't go on the sideboards anymore, you know, like in the days that we all played, you know, Takuma and, you know, Luke Dorner for Australia and all of those guys, some of the guys I'm thinking very quickly, Zeller, for example, like they used to hit the sideboards. Yeah. Whereas now a lot of the balls are going just to the edges of the runner's feet and just to the edges of the offset goalkeepers. So, yeah, there is a significant amount of power. But I think with the power that they're flicking at, again, I go back to this mindset of if I beat the runner, I think I'm going to score. So they're actually not even looking at the goalkeepers anymore. They're just trying to beat the runners, where it used to be, I used to have to flick so well to beat this amazing goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. Now all they're thinking about is just trying to beat the runner.
But that's funny, because that's exactly what I meant. That's what's surprising me a little bit, because if I'm only trying to beat the runner, then I would expect much more work with these angles of pushing the ball, offsetting to the left, offsetting to the right, trying to work on those flicks that are going rather past. So if the goal is to beat the runner, then pace should not necessarily be the most important ingredients, right? Mm-hmm. What you were saying, it like I don't see many like fakes like we saw in the past, like pulling the ball to the left and then releasing it to the right, or pulling it to the left and releasing it to the left, or whatever, playing a little bit with this. I don't see that so much, maybe because they have the ability to flick it so hard that they kind of don't really have to do it, or at least believe they don't have to do it. I don't know the statistics, but just from like how I feel it being I don't think there are more penalty corners, or the statistics are not better than they were in the past. At least it doesn't feel like that. Back in the days, we said like a really good tournament is if we score 30% of our set pieces. So yeah, that was a really good tournament, and 20 would still be good, and everything below that would was not a really good tournament for the drag flicking team or mm-hmm. short C team. So now I it doesn't feel like we're close to 30%, if 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also harder, I think. You have to be really good, really practiced to score those variations. It's you know, with the push out, the stopping. If it's basic, that's the most easy, and then they trust that, I think. So let's do a hard push out, a good stop, and a hard push. The chance of scoring, or at least getting it at goal, is, in my opinion, I think the biggest. And I think a lot of players and also countries think the same. The moment you start moving, the percentage of errors is also getting bigger, and you have to train that so well. And I know some countries do it. Holland does it. I saw the Germans do it. I thought Korea also tried almost every penalty corner in the movement, but you saw also the push was not good.
Maybe the injection was not that good.
could be, but you see the moment they start moving, also the power of the push is lower, or at least it's not 100%. So you have to be perfect.
Sorry, but by the way, a question regarding that, because I mean, the girls been doing that for a long time already, but I saw Simon Child. That was the first time I at least saw like one of the guys also doing the step up before the push. So the kind of two steps and then pushing it, which I always thought would rather lead to the runners being more able to really get the second when to sprint out and being closer to the shot. But the girls have been doing that for a while already. And I mean, obviously, due to the fact that it is a fast strength movement that is much easier for men to, in the end, get really a lot of speed on. But what's your experience there regarding the running? Is because obviously it's easier to find the second when to sprint out because the timing is easier to find. But would you say it's beneficial, and should the men also do that?
I think, the biggest reason that we implemented that in women's hockey is because it's just way faster to inject like that. So our main givers are doing it like that. And in the beginning, we were also hesitant, for the first runner, the timing, it really makes a difference because you can, you really have the cue, okay, now she's going to give it. But still, the difference in pace compared to just someone not doing it in movement is so big that it's only beneficial like that. And I think almost every country in women's hockey does it like that, or like injecting with a sweep. That's also a lot. But I think with men's hockey, probably the pace is already good enough to not having to do it in movement. I don't know. But I think even there you can gain still a lot of percentages. But it's true that I haven't seen it in men's hockey yet. I didn't even ask myself the question why, but it could be, could be a difference as well.
Did you stop times, Mark and Bob? Did you coaches stop the times of the injection?
We did,
Because we also did
it. At least we used to,
Yeah, we also did it, and that's why I just remember it was like 0.75 was really good, I think. I'm not really sure, but I think that was kind of the number. So yeah, I agree with Judith. It's probably difficult to get to 0.6 or whatever. That would really make a major impact, I guess.
One of the variations I noticed in women's hockey as well was with the German women, when the Belgian guy, Xavier Reckinger, was the head coach there. He often, from time to time, made them do the injection from the other side. Like often is done in indoor hockey sometimes as well. Why is there a reason why we don't see that as much, or not at all, even in men's international hockey?
Well, I mean, just from looking at it from an indoor perspective, it's easy because you just do it because it's actually even easier for that one person to receive and then drag flick quickly, right? Because you're already in the left foot front position, so it's the same movement. In outdoor hockey, I don't think there's a real reason, at least for the men's game, to do it. If you have drag flickers like the top six nations have, then I don't see a reason to do it because the other parts of that setup are much more difficult, the stopping and the positioning of the drag flicking. So considering the fact that the drag flick is still the, as Bob said, the biggest chance to score a goal, I don't see a reason to do it. That completely changes when we look at women hockey, because obviously not all teams have that strength from the set piece of someone really flicking it with 100 whatever K kilometers an hour into the net. So that could be a very smart decision to go from there and then look for variations. But I don't think we will see that a lot in men's hockey, to be honest.
Guys, what games are we let's start with Mark. What games are we looking forward to, or what players are we looking forward to in the upcoming games?
Well, the two I think that stand out for me, obviously I'm going to put my Australian hat on. Argentina is the second highest seed in our group. I think that would be a good challenge. I think Argentina will provide a very strong challenge. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit like Mo said. They're not a fluent goal scoring team. They create a bit. They're a bit of a challenge, but they're hard to play against. So I think they will provide a much more of a challenge for Australia in the way that they can keep the Aussies out and also get into their circle. So I'm looking forward to that on Monday night. And I think the biggest match of the tournament in the round games is Tuesday, Belgium, Germany. I can't wait. As a hockey lover, I'm going to look forward to watching that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Judith, do you agree? Belgium, Germany?
Can I ask a question?
Ask
one question, because I always wondered, how is that, Mark, how do you see that for the Australian team? Because obviously you guys sometimes had always, or you kind of always have that throughout the years, but now due to COVID, it's been even bigger for the Australian teams to kind of missing that match experience against the top teams over the last years, although Pro League has been on, but in the last 12, I don't know, they played India, I guess, quite a few times in the last 6 months, but apart from that, I don't think they played like the Germans, Belgians, Holland a lot. How do you see that? Do you think that's kind of a disadvantage of going forward in the tournament, or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it is in some ways. The only thing that I think, Mo, that would give the guys a lot of confidence is how they prepared for Tokyo 2021. With COVID, with no travel, we played four matches against New Zealand in 12 months leading up to Tokyo. And the team just got to stay home in Perth on their own, train a lot of different structures. They didn't have to show too much. They got a very, very good style of like passing and receiving improvements, probably just instead of worrying about going to Europe or going to India or going to somewhere and playing all of these teams, they just sat in Perth and just worried about themselves. So I think they'll take a lot of confidence out of how they prepared for that without the excellent or the significant exposure that playing against the Europeans gives. And I think... by the time they get through the round games and get to the quarterfinals, they're going to have had three matches against some good teams. They're going to have played France, a little bit of European flavor. They're going to play Argentina, who have their own style. And then they're going to have some, some 1v1 and some creative difficulties against a very nice South African team. So I think I'm hoping they'll be all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
The answer regarding the German team against the Belgians, I'm also looking forward to that game. I think Belgium obviously is, we've seen this over the last, I think, 40 years in hockey, that there has been a dominant team over like kind of almost a decade rather, or 6 to 10 years, whatever, that was very difficult to beat at that time. And I've hearing some people saying they're maybe over the edge already and they've won it all, and let's see how they can perform now. But you know, they are the dominant team in the hockey world over the last 6 to 8 years, whatever, and those teams are usually tournament teams, so you don't have to look at any of the pro league games and results. You don't have to worry about that at all. No one cares. They don't care. I'm 100% sure they are going for the big big thing, and that's this one, and that's Paris next year. And so I think they had a, I mean, we're talking about a 5-0 and saying they kind of had a slow start. I mean, that's already that already says it all, right? So I expect them being the biggest favorite for this tournament. I think if if Belgium can bring it together, if the top players are playing, I didn't know that Arthur was injured or might be injured or not playing. That's obviously would be a big miss for them. But apart from that, if the top guys are playing, then from just from the mindset, and again, talking about this, you can see that they are where, I mean, we were there for a while. The Australians were there at the beginning of the century, and the Dutch were there in the 90s, especially. You think you can't lose whatever happens. You think you're there, and whatever the score is, don't worry about it. And I think that's how Belgium played over the last years. So if you want to win a gold medal at this World Championships, you have to beat Belgium. That's for sure, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you did. For you also, Tuesday, the big game, because that game will decide who will probably face India or England in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tight game. And also, I don't know why, but if it's Belgium against Germany, it's always a bit tense. It's just on the limit or just over the limit. If I saw the games in Argentina, there were some, I don't know, exciting moments where there were some, I don't know. So it's every time then they play each other. I don't know. It's something from the past that still stays, but it's also high quality hockey. And I think they will both really want to win that pool. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to watch them play. Because also I really like how Germany plays, always like structured. And if I saw the goal from Ruhr from yesterday, that was kind of a beauty once again. So it's just high quality play, and it will be high rhythm, good pace. So I'm really looking forward to that game. And also another game I'm looking forward to is France against South Africa then, because I'm really curious how France will come back from the defeat against Australia. And it's also, they both, for them, it's already a have to win game if they want to continue in the tournament, more or less. So yeah, also excited for how that one goes. Mm-hmm. Honestly,
Bob, what do you think is the game to watch, or the player to watch in the next coming games?
Of course I'm gonna watch Holland play New Zealand. That's gonna be the pool decider as well. I think today is a good game, England against India. That's also going to be important, who's going to the quarterfinal directly, probably, and who has to play Belgium or Germany. So that's going to be a tough one. Of course, Belgium-Germany, I'm going to watch that. Also, I know a lot of the Belgium guys because I've played there for 3 years, so I know a bit how they play and how important that game is for them. And like Judith said, all the top teams, I think, play against each other in the second round now. So that also means that all of the lesser teams on paper also have to play each other. So that's going to be maybe not the most exciting games on paper, but it's going to be really important. So I think the whole second round is going to be deciding for a lot of teams. So that's exciting to watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mo, who is for you a player to watch in the upcoming games? Are you surprised by, for example, the addition of obviously Gonzalo Payá to your team? Is he going to make the big difference and bring home the gold for Germany like he did for Argentina?
Well, we're trying to transfer more international players to Germany over the next years to stay up. So if you have a German Shepherd at home, please give me a call.
Yeah.
I mean, undoubtedly, we don't have to doubt his abilities of flicking the short corner or the PC. But then again, he is yet to prove to be where he has been for Argentina in 2016. And I'm just from a PC perspective, I think he's playing quite decently in his back role there. But of course, he can make that difference. So, but we're yet to see him doing it again. So. It's going to be interesting to watch that. But looking at I'm really excited, as I said before, by South Africa. I think they have the Kasim brothers. Those are two players yeah. absolutely watch. I'm surprised they're not playing in Belgium or Holland yet. I know there are probably 15 teams talking to them daily.
They're playing in Germany, yeah?
Yeah, in the second division. So yeah. That's nuts. But still, but I love watching them. We haven't talked about them yet, but honestly, England not only surprised yeah. me in the Pro League over the last weeks, but also I think their opener was against Wales, of course, but that's still 5-0 is still a very good result. And I think they're playing some really good hockey. I like watching Phil Roper and Liam Ansell. I think those are amazing players. Their stick work is just, and with that speed, it's just impressive. And I mean, I played with him and he was a really, really young kid back then. He got only a couple of minutes sometimes in the Hockey India League. But the speed of Tom Craig and the way he can eliminate players, and then his still ability to find like the right pass at the right time, that's world class material. And I can't believe it's 6 years ago, but when he was basically sitting on a bench in Bhubaneswar, and now he's kind of leading that, that's fantastic to see. And I think he's an amazing player, and we will see a lot of him. And I also think that he can make a difference for the Australian team when it comes down to the wire.
Mm-hmm. Mark, other than Tom Craig, who's the player to watch for you?
There's actually too many players to watch. I think a guy who impressed me yesterday was Jorik Kroon, a countryman of yours. I thought, he's more influential now. And I think if he really wants to take his game to the next level, he has to do that more consistently. I think if you're talking, to all of us on the screen, we want to see the best players dominating games. And I think that's the challenge for him as he grows. Christopher Rua, he's tricky. He's more mature. He looks like he's playing as a more mature player now, which I like. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I retired along, 4 years ago, so it was a different Rua back then. But I think he looks like he's a better player now, and he's playing in structure. He looks like he's more confident. And I think the guys that I'm just going to quickly give a bit of a plug to, very rarely get a plug, but I actually think this World Cup may come down to the best goalkeeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know who that is.
I know.
But I do know.
No one knows.
I'm not sure. But I do think that the best team at this World Cup will need to have a goalkeeper who is world's best, let's say that. And traditionally we've talked a lot about drag flickers. Mm-hmm. Well, if their enemy is the goalkeeper, I think we're going to see the team that wins the World Cup will have the best goalkeeper here, I believe. So yeah. I don't know who it is, but I think the team that wins will have the best goalkeeper.
Yeah, you did. Who's the best goalkeeper?
You know my answer on that one, but also I was in another podcast that we were talking about. I was like, yeah, the team that is going to become world champion, I think they will have to pass by a shootout session. It's really often that one close game, quarterfinals, semifinals, that it will happen like that. And there, yeah, we've seen it all how strong Fanash is on that one, and how confident he is, and also the team. If they go in shootouts, they're like, yeah, they already know, okay, we have won this one. But I think, yeah, the Dutch also have a pretty good goalkeeper on that one. I think the Australian one is also very good. So I'm really excited to see some shootouts, but I think that's also a really important part of our game, that if you want to become a champion in a big tournament, you will have to have a good goalkeeper on that aspect as well, definitely. Yeah.
Bob, you played with the best goalkeeper in the world. Yeah. What's your take?
No, he's incredible in shootouts. He's also incredible in goalkeeping in general, Fanash. Yeah. So that obviously is a big difference maker in the game, can be. Mm-hmm. And it's important. I don't know. I think he still is the best, if you're honest. A lot of younger goalies are getting a chance now, which is nice to see. But yeah, we don't know yet. So that's they can make a difference, but yeah, we have to see. It is an important point. I agree completely with you, Mark. That the goalies, they, yeah, like I experienced it also against Jumo in the EHL final with Van Assie. That he's so good in shootouts and he's so confident. I do think he had a more difficult year leading up to the World Cup. He didn't play as much for some other reasons as well. So we still have to see how that goes this tournament. But it helps. I'm curious. For players to watch, I also agree with you, Mark. I think Jorrit Kroon can be a player that takes Holland to the next level. They have a lot of young players as well. One for me that's quite exciting to watch is Reinga. He's playing left back, but in a really attacking way, a bit like Swan did for you guys or Eddie did some years back. Those guys, they if they have the ball, you never know what's going to happen. So they're more attacking players than defenders. That's what I like to see. Also, England, Roper, Ansel, they can surprise, I think. They had a good Commonwealth Games. They were really strong. Mm-hmm. And I think they still have that vibe in the team that they can create an upset in this tournament against some good teams. Yeah.
Yeah. The English usually come in fourth. Can they make a medal, do you think, this time?
Oh, why not?
I hope not.
Mo Stadler is a young goalie for Germany, or a lesser experienced goalie maybe. Will that make a difference, do you think?
It can. I was writing kind of a summary for the newspapers in Germany, and I'm a big fan. I have to say I watched him over obviously grow up and played a lot against him, but because he was got that position of a first goalie in his team very young, at a very young age. He played the Olympics already, so he does not have the experience of 100 caps, but he does have the experience of big tournaments. Absolutely, you're absolutely right. He has to prove himself being worthy of the synonym world class, and I agree. The teams need a world class goalkeeper to win it, but I think he can do that. I think he is there, he didn't concede a goal yet, so a clean sheet, which is a good start, I guess, for a goalkeeper into a tournament. But we will see it. Honestly, we will see it on Tuesday. That will show it all. Yeah. If he can take away some of the PCs from Belgium, if he can stay in the game and keep the team in the game for like a long time, then he can prove himself already there. But you're right. The experience is a lot less than at the other top teams. In this tournament.
Okay, guys, let's start wrapping up because the other games have already started for today, and we're excited to watch some hockey as well. So, but Judith, then let's start with you for the first and obvious question to end this podcast, to end this panel talk with. Who will become the world champion and why? If you can't name Belgium.
If I can't name Belgium, then I'll go for Australia. I think they were really close in the previous two big tournaments where they lost against the Dutch in the semifinals 4 years ago, and also like the final against Belgium with shootouts. I think they have a really impressive team. I really love the way they play. Just full speed forward, full power, vertical hockey. I really like that. I'm hoping for another Belgium Australia final. And of course, I hope that Belgium takes it. But Australia really impressive and really really love the world to watch them play. Australia.
Yeah, Mark, I guess that you're also rooting for a revenge for the Tokyo final, and this time probably that Australia will win it. But who will win gold if it's not Australia, and why?
I think it will be Belgium if it's not Australia. I agree with Mo. I think they have an aura about them at the moment that we've seen in certainly in my career playing against Germany. They are our biggest rivals. There was an aura about the world's best team that you always knew that it was going to be a fight. You never felt like you were in control. The match swung a lot. I do think that their experience is significant in big tournaments. Mm-hmm. I agree that the Pro League means very little because they're playing on a Wednesday night in Germany. That means nothing, you know. So I think if it's not Australia, it will be Belgium. If I pick my World Cup final that I would love, it would be Australia against Malaysia or Chile. That would be... that would be much better.
Okay, Bob, same question for you. If it's not Holland, who's going to win the World Cup and why?
I would put my money on Australia this year. I think the Belgian team is really strong, like everyone said, but I think they won the last Olympics, the last World Cup. It's going to be close. The thing I like about Australia is, and I think what's also scary for the European teams is that they are so connected. They had a preparation all by themselves. They have a nice style of play, which I don't think we're used to that much. So I think this is the year, if it's not Holland, Australia will beat Belgium or Germany or Holland in the final. Because of that, I think they have the edge now, but it's going to be close. Mm-hmm. If Holland becomes champion, that will be a surprise, I think. But they're an outsider. You never know. Yeah, you never know.
True. Mo, different question for you. Germany is going to become world champion. Why?
Of course. Sure. Sorry, but can I answer the other question?
go.
I want to explain first, because I really believe in what I said before, in this mindset and what Mark called aura about teams. Mm-hmm. And on the backside of that coin, where we're talking about Belgium being so strong mentally and having this aura, I think that Australia and also the Germans and the Dutch at the moment, they don't have that aura. So they have to prove themselves being a gold medal team, mm-hmm. in whatever competition, and they have not proven that yet. And when it comes down to winning the big things, then it's more than being good or really good. They are all really good when it comes to the semifinal final. And Belgium has not... They are still playing with that exact same team, basically, that won that won it all. And even with like Venier or De Slover coming in, like really guys that are making the team better already, mm-hmm. without having like the important players of the team leaving. Mm-hmm. And I think we always saw that change of what I called like the dominating teams. We always saw that being changed once the two or three most influential players of the team left the team. And then it doesn't matter how good the youngsters are who come in, because it's too difficult to take over that role immediately. It takes some time. And I don't think that time is over yet for Belgium. But at the same time, I don't think that the other teams are ready to take over that domination. And we might see that. Maybe I mean Judith, you spoiled things there, but we might see it if injuries come into place and suddenly we do not see Van Doren or John or others on the pitch, because of course everybody's getting older and we might see that more often, and then that change will definitely come, and that's it's very interesting to see who will take over the domination. And Australia is my strongest candidate for that for the next decade. But my guess is it's not going to happen this year yet. And that's why I think Belgium will win the World Championship.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, there's also, I want to, can I still add a little on that? I guess there's some fuss in Belgium on the fact that it's been the same team for the last 5-6 years, and that certainly if you see look at their striker line, I think they're all at least 30 plus, and they've been playing with each other for 8 years, and small panic in Belgium now is like they will probably continue till Paris, and then you have, in my opinion, 7-8 guys that will quit the team, and then yeah, then is it difficult to keep the same ambition? And it's the balance between you want to win this World Cup and you want to win Paris, but you also want to integrate the youth. And it's something that has been very difficult in Belgium in the last years. You have De Slover, Kina and Wenge, but for the rest, it's been the same names. And I think that's a really, really tricky one with the women's hockey. It's just, yeah, the youth is better than the players that are in the team, so that makes it easy. But now at what point do you kick the older ones out to actually make room for the young players when the older players are actually still better? And it's, yeah, I'm kind of interested what your vision on that one is. When do you make the switch?
Mark, good question for you.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think you're absolutely right with Belgium. I know our Australian team went through this. We got to a point where we had eight of our starting, you know, best 12 or 13 players all went out, and it was a big shock to our system. I agree with Mo about how the integration of those three exceptional younger players has helped Belgium become better, and you just named those three, and I think they have made the team better. The challenge is always you can give players international experience, but playing a round match in the Pro League is not like playing in Paris. It's not like playing in a World Cup semi-final. So that's a big challenge for all countries. I think, you know, the best programs, the best coaches are able to integrate a mix of players in and stay at the highest level. I think you've got to try your best. And I think the important part is that in all of the best teams that we have all played in, you've got to have four or five key position players who are world-class normally. Not many teams win world championships or Olympics without four or five world-class players. And I think the challenge for all the countries in men's and women's is how do you integrate players in around those world-class players. So I agree. Some of those boys in that Belgium team, you know, we played against them in 2008 in Beijing. So they're, you know, and they would be easily the most experienced team at this tournament. They're probably 200 plus on average. That's just amazing. So that's a good challenge for Belgium hockey. I know we've been through it before. All the guys on this call have done it, but I think that's where the coaches earn their money.
Yeah. That's true. Having my oldest boy be the under 21s coach for Belgium for already 6 or 7 years, I think Belgium is fine. They're gonna get all the right talent they need.
Perfect.
let me ask maybe Judith once more, and that's the final question for today, because Judith, you've had the experience of playing a World Cup in two different cities with flying in between. Yeah, most of you guys have had the Hockey India League experience, where you have more or less the same play and fly and play and fly and play and fly routine. But has it made an impact on you, Judith, with the Belgian women first playing in Spain and then have to play the quarterfinals in Holland? And will it have an impact in this World Cup as well?
Yeah, for us it was a bit different, because now with the men they even have to travel winning their pool games. So with us, it was certain that we played our pool in one city. So that gave a bit of ease and calm in the preparation. But yeah, we had to play the quarterfinal in Holland. And if we won it, then we had to travel back to Spain. And at one point, yeah, you cannot be that sure that you leave your stuff in Spain. And so it's, at one point, you have to already be prepared that there are two certain roads to the final, and it's part of the preparation, it's part of the challenge. I'm sure that every single staff member and every single player is already prepared for the different plans, but it's not ideal, but it's also, I think in India, it's fun if you see both stadiums. I think it's exciting to play in both of them. With us, we were pretty excited to actually go to Holland because it was for 10,000 people, while in Spain, I think there were thousands. So It's I think in India both stadiums are nice, but it's an extra challenge, but that makes it even more fun, I think.
Yeah. Mo, do you think that it will have an impact, the traveling between the two stadiums and the cities?
It cannot have an impact. It may not have an impact. If you're a top team, you want to win the world championships, you don't fucking care if you play every day somewhere else. You got to be the best, you're prepared, and you have to win it. And I think teams would make a very big mistake even talking about that. Mm-hmm. And apart from that, it's the same for most of the teams. So teams are not, it's not a good choice to look for excuses in traveling or whatever. It's what it is. Go there, play, yeah. Be the best, and go home with a medal.
Well, good words to end this show with. Guys, let me thank you all for your participation in this first panel talk during the World Cup here, and it's been a fun talk. Hope you had fun as well. We are back with the second panel talk on Saturday next week, where we will have New Zealander Shane Beckelies, former international for New Zealand. We will have the former international from Belgium, Xavier Reckinger. We will have the current coach for Bloemendaal, Rick Matthijssen, former assistant coach to the Belgium to the Dutch men, as well. And if all goes right, and if he can make it, Quan Brown, assistant coach for GB in England, will also be in that talk. So
nice.
We're back in a week. And meanwhile, thanks, guys, for your talk. And let's enjoy the World Cup.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Lots of fun.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Ciao.